Hi, this is Jeffrey Bell, one of the executive producers of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Welcome back, true believers. This is Comic Book Central. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. This week, I hope you watch the latest episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. featuring friend of Comic Book Central and our guest on Episode 8, Jamie Alexander, reprising her Thor and Thor the Dark World role of Lady Sif, the Asgardian warrior. She crushed it on that episode. And we were also introduced to yet another Marvel character, Lorelei, played by the equally lovely and talented Elena Satine. Lorelei, by the way, first appeared back in 1983 in the Mighty Thor issue 337, created by the great Walt Simonson. By the way, on the IndieCast, my IndieCast partner in crime, Keith Voss, and I interviewed Walt back on IndieCast episode 136. Just saying, you might want to go check that interview out. It's pretty cool. Now, back to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am. If you bailed on the show, first of all, shame on you. It's getting really, really, really good. You're missing out a lot. And it's going to tie into the Marvel movie stuff. You know it will because it's already doing so. Second, spoiler alert, if you're not caught up, we're going to be talking about the latest episodes on today's show. So push pause, go catch up on the latest episodes of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at abc.go.com or download earlier ones on iTunes. They're only $2.99 a pop. Have your mind blown at the cool Marvel characters they're bringing to life, and then come right back here to get some background on those episodes. If you're already caught up, you're a loyal fan, you've been watching, great. Let's do this thing and learn a little bit more about today's guest, Jeffrey Bell. Then we'll hear from the man himself. Quick note, my apologies in advance. There's a slight bit of interference on the line as I speak to Jeffrey. I can't help but think that Nick Fury might have been listening in to make sure there are no level 8 secrets being spilled. I'm telling you, the NSA's got nothing on S.H.I.E.L.D. Jeffrey Bell started his Hollywood writing career firmly entrenched in the world of science fiction. The truth is out there, and Jeffrey was writing it on the smash Fox hit The X-Files. Staying with genre TV, he was a writer, director, and producer on Joss Whedon's spinoff of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, eventually becoming a showrunner on that series. Jeffrey then jumped headfirst into the mythology of J.J. Abrams' techno action-adventure spy series Alias, where he continued to wear the numerous hats of writer, director, and producer. Having extensive experience writing and producing the worlds of sci-fi and espionage paid off big time in 2013 as Jeffrey became part of the ever-expanding Marvel Universe. He, along with showrunners Marissa Tancheroen and Jed Whedon, took the reins of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the television continuation of the Marvel movie universe. Now, the show has been the source of much criticism since launching, with detractors complaining about the lack of superpowered beings on the show. That's a claim I personally find a bit mystifying, as we've already seen the first appearances of Deathlok the Demolisher, Lorelei an Asgardian Villainess, the supervillain Graviton, not to mention appearances by Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury, Kobe Smulders as Agent Maria Hill, and a guest appearance by Stan the Man Lee on an action-filled episode set aboard a speeding train. Whew, what more could you want? Well, we're about to get a lot more, as you'll find out from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. writer and executive producer, Jeffrey Bell. Let's welcome to the show one of the guiding forces behind Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., executive producer and writer, Jeffrey Bell. Jeffrey, welcome to the Comic Book Central Lair.
Hi, Joe. Thank you very much.
Now, it's no S.H.I.E.L.D. Globemaster or Helicarrier, but I think I've tricked the lair out pretty nice for you for your visit today, so hope you appreciate it here. You know, I interviewed Jonathan Frakes recently. He's obviously the director of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Episode 8, The Well, and he commented on the security there at the studio. I got from our conversation it's very S.H.I.E.L.D.-like. He said he wasn't even given a card key to enter the building. I have to ask, as we start this interview, as executive producer of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., what clearance level can you grant to me?
We'll have to see. It's a question-by-question basis. You know, there's a lot of them there. You know, there's a lot that I can say, and there's a couple things that I can't say.
Are you gonna no comment me or need to know me on this one? Oh, okay.
No, I will say that's a really interesting question.
I'll have to get back to you on that one. Yeah. All right. So something tells me Nick Fury's listening in. So, okay. All right. Let's start. We'll start with the easy ones. How does a guy from the Midwest who studied photography end up in Hollywood writing for The X-Files, Angel, Alias, and now heading up S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, growing up in the Midwest, I always liked monster movies and scary stories and always loved movies in general. Always hoped to do that. And so when I came of age and could afford to move away, I came out to go to UCLA Film School and did features for a while. And then through a friend had a chance to meet Chris Carter. And X-Files was, I wasn't a giant TV fan earlier, but X-Files was the thing I'd fallen in love with. And when I had a chance to meet him, and then I went as a writer to pitch three stories, and they bought one of my stories and then offered me a staff position. And I had no idea how amazing TV was. You know, this was 1998, 1999 or so, and I didn't know that working in television was kind of like working on independent film, where as a writer, you could be on set, be in casting, do music, actually be a filmmaker. And so moving up to the writing ranks to become a showrunner, you know, the beauty of that in television is I really get to do all the aspects of filmmaking. So that's been spectacular, and to work with, you know, Chris and then Joss on Angel and JJ on Alias and all the other great people in the, you know, you kind of get branded a genre guy, and I like genre, so I'm very content with that. I like telling these stories. I like the metaphors that are at the hearts of these stories. I like the what if, you know, you can talk about things in genre stories that you can't talk about in realistic films because it just seems so literal, but you can find metaphors for things. And, you know, I love the what if of the genres, and Marvel right now is doing that as well as anybody. And so I'm thrilled to be here with Joss and Jed and Marissa to do that.
Well, especially these shows that you've worked on that have such a deep mythology to them. I mean, you really get to delve into that. You sort of get to plant the seeds in one episode, and then you've got all these story arcs that you can flesh it out, assuming, you know, the ratings are up and you get time to work these out. But the shows that you've been working on, you really get to get in deep. In your background, you mentioned some of those movies that you liked. What were some of the elements from those movies that you're able to bring in? Is there anything you're like, oh, I'm going to take that, or this is going to be a riff on this old movie that I like?
I don't know if it's so much anything specific like that where I'd like to do, like, my version of that. Here's an example. I love in Blade Runner. Blade Runner is this really cool futuristic dystopian story about this, you know, cop, but really it asks all the questions of who am I, why do I exist, and how long do I have? And I love that, you know, Rutger Hauer is asking the same questions everybody else has, and it comes off in this very beautiful, poetic way. And I like the worlds that are created in these. I like, you know, I like Italian neorealism films, but I like movies and stories that have something beyond what, maybe it's my Midwestern background where I was looking for something a little more exciting, you know, a little more what if. You're looking for knights or dragons or monsters or aliens or something to sort of spice up, you know, a rural kid's life. But, you know, I love those aspects. And so when we think about these kind of stories, it's like Coulson's journey here. Coulson, you know, he died and he came back. What does that mean? Who am I? Why am I here? All those questions get played out in a really exciting world. On a plane. Did I mention a plane?
Yeah. Just for the record, you opened the door on Coulson dying and coming back. So when we talk about this later, I don't want you to, you know.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Sure. Hey, just for the record, you opened the door. That's all I'm saying. Hey, you know, you work closely with Joss Whedon on the show Angel. We mentioned that. Joss pretty much pulled off the impossible by taking all those pieces of the Marvel movie puzzle, the phase one, and building the blockbuster, the Avengers. Knowing him as you do, how was he able to pull all that together, and what do you take away from that as you help build your corner of the Marvel TV universe?
What I take away from it is that life is really unfair because Joss has way more natural talent and skill than any of us will ever have. It's sad but true. He has such a unique take on the world.
What is it about him specifically? Yeah, what does he bring to this then? Or is it just so out there?
Well, it's who he is. He is incredibly funny and he's incredibly smart and he understands emotions and kind of puts emotions first and foremost in everything. And so, you know, the people who love Buffy is because of the emotions. And he's more interested in the feelings than in the plot. And he recognizes that at the end of it, what you're going to take away with is a feeling. And so I remember when I went to Angel, my takeaway was, it's about the emotions, stupid, and that's what's important. And the fact that he can do that and be, and he's just funny and witty, and suddenly I'm doing something from My Fair Lady. But he is a unique individual that way, and he just has that thing. I mean, he writes something, and you go, oh, crap, I wish I'd thought of that. Or he'll come on, and he'll just have that line, and you go, yeah, that's better. And it's a natural gift, but he works very hard as well. But I think taking his humor and his emotions and then marrying that with the Marvel Universe is what makes The Avengers such a terrific movie. You know, you've got great, giant, awesome spectacle, but you also have these wonderful little scenes between people. You have, you know, Banner and Stark, you know, going at it and getting together and liking each other. And you've got just stupid things like Hulk, you know, ragdolling Loki.
Hulk punching Thor. Yeah.
I mean, it's those little moments.
Those are the things you remember. Yeah.
That's what you remember. Not 50,000 alien invasion. That's cool, but it's those little moments that you remember. And he's like the king of that. And there are so many movies that he did that in that people don't know that he did that in, as like writing stuff and punching stuff up, that, you know, there's a reason he has the success he has. And it pisses me off.
Well, hey, you could steal from him. You're close enough. You could just, you know, just sit back, watch him.
What's sad is, you know, his brother Jed, who's co-created the show with Marissa, there must be something in the Whedon genetics, because Jed has that too. He's just quick and smart and funny. And then he found Marissa, who is also quick and smart and funny and can also sing. I mean, it's not fair. They kind of have a genetic overload of talent. And I'm swimming in that pool, which makes my life a whole lot easier.
Well, it's nice to see all of you are bringing a lot of those elements into Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because as we're ramping up throughout the season, you can see all these little moments coming in. So let's talk a little bit about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I have to ask, how tired are you of discussing Nielsen ratings at this point?
I'm not tired of it because they don't really talk about it.
How tired are you of being asked about it?
There are many things that we as the writers of the show can control. And when it's aired, how it's promoted, who shows up, whether they show up on the night it airs or 3 days or 7 days later, is something that we can't control. And so if you would look at our numbers, because here's what happens. Day of ratings, people go, oh, you guys suck. And then they add three, and then they add seven, and then suddenly we're like, the number two, three, or four show on the air, and we have more men watching us than any other show on television. Those are good numbers, but all you hear is so that you know. And so I think the other thing that challenged us was we came in after the Avengers and then Iron Man 3, which were $1 billion box office exceptions to every rule, and I think people were expecting a new TV show that. You know, look, we will spend less money on our first 22 episodes than like half of one of their 2-hour movies.
Yeah, you're doing 22 hours worth of stuff. I mean, yeah, do the math.
Yeah, and so, you know, we're telling a different kind of story, and I think there are a lot of different expectations going into this. And I think there are people who are like, cool, I can't wait to see Spider-Man on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or, you know, the Hulk or something, and the reality was when Joss, Jed, and Marissa came up with this, it was like not all heroes are super, and we can tell a different kind of story. We can tell more emotional stories. We can tell hopefully stories with humor, and we're still about as big as any show on television in terms of the kind of stunts and action and effects that we're doing. But I think there were expectations of us to be more like, you know, Iron Man. And I think the other thing that has taken a while for people to catch on with is all the Marvel movies begin with a character you already know. You know, oh, look, that's Iron Man like in the comics, or that's Thor like in the comics, and they knew Agent Coulson, but these are all new Marvel characters. Everybody else on the show is new, and it takes a while for people to understand them, like them, care about them, and I think that's happening. You know, we've aired 13 episodes, so we're just past our halfway mark. And
well, yeah, you've had decades of character development in the Marvel comics. I mean, you've only had a few hours to meet these characters. But you know, and it's an interesting tagline you mentioned too. You know, not all heroes are super, but as you're ramping up throughout the season, they're getting pretty super.
Yeah, and, well, thank you. And I feel like, you know, the other thing that we're dealing with, and I've talked about this in some other interviews, is I feel like, you know, we're doing a 22 episode arc. And the pace of that is a little bit different than doing a 10-episode or 13-episode arc like a lot of the cable shows or Netflix shows. And so the velocity of that story is a little bit different. And so when you're watching a cable show, by episode 7, you're halfway through and you're feeling, oh, my God, we're building. And, you know, episode 7 is we're just kind of coming to the end of the first act, you know, in terms of thinking about the season as a movie. And so we are now to the halfway mark. And I think people are seeing that things we had set up that felt like a standalone moment in episode 3 or 2 or 4 or 5 or 6 are in fact coming back, and we're tying things together. And Centipede hasn't gone away, and the Eye from 4, and Quinn from episode 3, and all those things actually were being set up and they're coming together. And I'm hoping people can see that and go, oh, I see what they're doing, and I feel like we're getting urgency and momentum, and I think if people stick around, they're going to get quite a satisfying ride.
Yeah, anybody that's tuned out at this point has missed a lot. So, I mean, go get caught up. I mean, some of the episodes are still on ABC.com, so make sure you get those. As executive producer, you have to have a foot in each world, the Marvel movie universe, the Marvel TV universe. What's the relationship between the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. team and the Marvel movie studio? Because you've got Captain America, you've got Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers. What's the relationship there?
The relationship is we are a child of their universe. You know, Coulson came out of the Marvel movie universe. And so our television universe exists as part of the Marvel movie universe. So everything we do and everything they do, we talk about. So when we know there's going to be something that has a plot or has a character or has, you know, an object or something, we'll check with them. You know, or they'll let us know we're thinking about this. And so as we're talking about stuff, we go back and forth and make sure that what we're doing is in line with the giant scope of the Marvel movie universe, which is, you know, a big challenge. And so I think the movie people have been very generous with us coming in, and the fact that Joss does both helps a lot. But Kevin Feige and everybody over there, and Jeff Loeb and on the Marvel TV side, have all been working really hard to make it as seamless and as enjoyable on both sides as possible.
Did you have a Marvel movie wish list when you started in production? Because obviously you've gotten, you know, a lot of those actors coming over. You know, we've got Jamie Alexander portraying Lady Sif again. You've got Samuel L. Jackson. So you sort of have this little grocery list of things to check off as you're going
through. Here's what we'd like to do. I mean, obviously, we want our show to succeed on its own, not through guest stunt casting of, oh, thank God I can watch it because Chris Evans is showing up. You know, we really want people to care about our characters. There are times, though, when there are characters either from the movie universe or from the Marvel comic universe, which we have a little bit more latitude with. And so we're looking more to that. But as we go forward and there are opportunities that arise from the movies, you know, absolutely. We've got, you know, Titus Welliver, who had been in one of the one-shots, was in episode 6. And, you know, so we're looking for actors we find interesting who could come in and added an interesting color to our show. So, and Jamie did that with an upcoming episode. So, no, it's fun, but it's got to fit into the stories that we're telling versus just doing something because, hey, cool, we can get this guy to do a flyby.
How much of the Marvel comic book universe were you familiar with during pre-production, and how much homework are you and the other writers doing as you're going through this to sort of mine that rich background of characters?
I would say, you know, everybody here has some knowledge of genre in general, and then getting into the comics and the Marvel comic universe, there's been, we have some people on the show guy named Paul Spashevsky, who has, I think, owns every Marvel comic ever made and just knows it super well. And then we have a couple people who it was sort of new, and so we've all been reading a bunch of stuff. There's whether people are reading, you know, The Ultimates or reading Secret Warriors or reading, you know, Histories of S.H.I.E.L.D. or there was a run of Deathlok comics, and it's fun for us to look at, not just for the storytelling but also for the art, frankly. There are some in episode I guess it's episode 7, which was The Hub, and we get the Overkill device, and we really went back and looked at a lot of, like, Steranko panels to see, like, the kind of designs that he was using, the patterns that he used. When we were looking to design these devices, we were trying to find stuff that would fit into that world. And Jeff Loeb always talks about how in the Marvel comics, what made them different was how Kirby would bring the action off the page at the viewer rather than across the page. And so when we're talking with our directors, we'll frequently pull up panels from comics and say, see how this comes at you, see the, you know, the giant fist in the foreground. We're trying to get that feeling coming off the television screen. So we'll look at Marvel panels. It might not even be literally the right story element, but the way it's framed, the way it's drawn, are really inspired by those comics.
It's interesting you say that too, because Steranko was one of the critics early on in the show. It's coming in some of those earlier episodes. So it's interesting that you are mining some of those classic elements that you know, artists like Steranko brought to life. And hey, again, if people are dropped out, they're going to miss those. They're going to miss those opportunities as they come up.
Yeah, no, you know, I'm sorry you felt that way, because we love his art. You know, he's great.
Oh, it's classic, yeah. Now, in the 12th episode, Seeds, we see a S.H.I.E.L.D. memorial wall. Any Marvel in-jokes there? Any familiar names on the wall?
We did, you know, we talked a lot about that, and because of the emotions of the scene, we ended up not doing that. We talked about planting a bunch of other names into it for close-ups and stuff that people could freeze on, and we ended up not doing that. And so she just mentions, you know, Bucky's name when she looks at it, and there's a lot of discussion about that, but no.
No need for any of us to freeze frame any of that.
I don't think your time... There are other episodes, but I think they're, you can say, save an hour of your life.
Other episodes are freeze frameable, correct? I think one of those is probably Tracks, episode 13. You have one of the strongest episodes to date in the series. Everyone had a great part in this one, and you had mentioned, I think, in another interview about turning cards over, that you're taking time turning these cards over and doing these reveals. Yeah. A lot of cards were turned over in this one. Even Stan the Man Lee, what was it like to work with the co-creator of the Marvel comic book universe?
Well, I'd had the pleasure of meeting him a few years ago. He had a deal with ABC, and I had a deal at ABC, so I got over and meet him and go in and have him pitch some series ideas. So, you know, look, he's fantastic. He's a legend. We have a picture of him on the wall here at the office. And so, you know, being able to bring this very spry, very together 91 or 2-year-old man out, put him on the train, put a couple pretty girls on either side of him, and have him do his thing was really fun. Everybody got a kick out of it. Everybody was taking pictures. You know, he is one of the big names in our business. So that was fun for everybody.
And is there a concerted effort too?
And by the way, my secret pitch is he's the clairvoyant. We'll reveal that. In fact,
you took one of my questions.
That night on the train.
Wouldn't that
the
be amazing?
You heard it exclusive here.
Wow, a Comic Book Central exclusive. Now we know. Amazing. So that would be amazing. Is there a concentrated effort with the character of Melinda May, played brilliantly by Ming-Na Wen, to sort of bring this Black Widow-ish kind of character in? Because it's almost like, you know, just flying the plane at the beginning. But now, especially in Tracks, it's very Scarlett Johansson what's being brought into this. Amazing scenes.
Well, the way we always talked about her was Wolverine.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, it was just when we first talked about her, she was a person of few words whose action always spoke louder than words. I feel like Black Widow actually is a little, especially the way Scarlett plays it, is a little bit more conversational. You know, she'll kick somebody's ass. and turn to you and go, so last Thursday I was thinking, and then she gets back into it, and there's a casualness to her that I think is super cool. And for us, May is, you know, I think it took Ming a little while to trust us that we knew what we were doing, because, you know, when you're an actor and you see he has this paragraph and he has that paragraph and she has that paragraph and you've got two words, you're like, well, what's wrong with my words? And what we always say is we write a paragraph, we cut it down to a couple sentences, then we cut it down to two words, and then we realize, oh, she can do that with a look. And so by distilling her down, you know, to looks, to as few words as possible, to be as specific as possible, and then she brings so much feeling between that. And so, you know, my favorite scenes in the show, I love, like, her and Coulson together. You know, he'll come to the office and they have those scenes, and where she gets to be a little bit more, where she lets her guard down a little bit.
Well, there's brilliant comedy that comes out of that, too.
She does so much with the look, and I think, and that's another thing coming out of the Joss world is, anytime there's anything funny, you try and throw it away. You try not to milk it. It's just, you don't make it a joke, you throw it away. And Clark is the king of that. Clark gets that. We have yet to write a line that Clark can't say and make it sound like Agent Coulson.
Yeah.
He gets it. He throws it away.
Oh, the scene with him and Ward at the hollow table when they're discussing.
Yeah.
And Ward's like trying to bring up, you know, the relationship that he had. Yeah. He just shuts him down.
No, it's fantastic. And so I think everyone else, because, you know, Ming is a very experienced actress and has done tons of great work, and this is just a different part for her, you know?
Yeah.
And then everybody else is pretty new at the job, and so having Clark as number one on the call sheet I think has been awesome for everybody, because they see how he'll take a line and how he'll make something out of the smallest thing. And then Ming now does that with her looks, with a reaction. She's always giving you something. Just when you're editing something, you're not only on the person who's talking, but you're looking at how people are reacting. She's always giving you something fantastic that way. And I think the younger people are learning so much of that, and are every episode getting better and better.
Another amazing character that was brought in, J. August Richards, great actor, plays Mike Peterson, who we now know is Deathlok the Demolisher. 2014, great opportunity for this. It's the 40th anniversary of the character's first appearance. Do you get, in addition to meeting Stan Lee, do you get to sort of meet some of these other artists and creators like Rich Buckler and Doug Mensch who've created some of these characters, or do you get some input, or they kind of say, hey, thanks?
We haven't, I hope. I mean, one of the beauties is, you know, Chief Creative Officer of Marvel is Joe Quesada, who is one of the great artists of all time. And so he will occasionally go, hey, here's a sketch I was thinking that might look like this. And you're like, okay, I'm going to keep this napkin because it's super cool. So, no, we haven't had a chance to meet some of those other people, but I hope in time we do.
Oh, that'd be cool, like little cameos or something. Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. No, we've talked about doing that, and it's right now we're just trying to, you know, I mean, Stan Lee is sort of a knowing wink and a nod, but in general we want people to buy into this universe and this world and hang on. So we don't want to get too busy with the, you know, with the inside things too soon.
Now, early speculation on the show was that that character, Mike Peterson, that the J. August Richard plays, was Luke Cage. We now know that that's not the case. He's Deathlok. But we know that Luke Cage is going to be appearing as a television project. Are you going to have anything to do with the Marvel, Netflix, ABC deal that brings the Marvel shows to TV? We've got Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, and Luke Cage, and also the Defenders. Do you have any foot in that world?
I have both feet directly over them because one of their offices is two floors down. But that's it. No, it's
just geographically is all we're talking about.
Geographically, yes. Any other reason? No.
Glass to the floor, listening in. Can you? You know? Okay.
That we know each other and talk, but no, that's a separate, completely Netflix and Marvel. You know, Netflix will own that character with ABC and Marvel, and so in terms of crossovering with that or that kind of thing, I don't know what the rules are on that. You know, like, there are rules because people own certain characters. But, no, we were thrilled. Look, Jay came in and nailed it as Mike Peterson. And And so we loved him then and needed to sort of earn. You know, Deathlok is, okay, I'm going to say two things next to each other, and you tell me if that makes sense, okay?
Okay.
ABC, Deathlok. A natural fit?
I think so.
Well, we're trying, but I think if we went Deathlok too early, I think it might have been a bit.
But you're talking to somebody who's obsessed with comic books, though.
You know, and so part of what we're doing is finding our place on ABC, and ABC's done a great job of promoting us. And,
well, I love the fact that
supporting
you're
supporting us.
I love the fact that you're planting the seeds, though. I mean, that's the great benefit of having a 22 episode season, and
it
if it goes for years,
so
well. Yeah, but I mean, look at some of those. Even X-Files took like what 4 years to launch before it hit like top 15.
It took 7 years for. Well, we joke. It took 7 years for Mulder to find his sister.
Yes.
And I think that was perfect for then. And I loved that. And I was thrilled, you know.
But you couldn't get away with that today.
No. Episode 5. Oh my God, she's Stardust.
Right.
Yes. Spoiler alert. So you have to do that. But there was a real impatience with people early on. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Well, like, trust us. Be patient.
You know? We're planting the seeds.
And so, yeah. So, you know, you have a superpower guy in episode 4. Then we bring up somebody has a cybernetic eye in episode 4.
The one you wrote.
Then, the one I wrote. And then, you know, episode 5, we're back. And so Centipede hasn't gone away yet. And then we bring Mike back, who's a good guy, who's not a cop, but he is now trying to be a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And then in episode 10, he goes, boom, and sadness. And then we show, he lost half his face, is scarred up, now and he's missing a leg. And so hopefully somebody out there is starting to think. And then we show, he now has a cybernetic eye. And so I would think the hardcore fans are going, are they really doing this? And then, you know, showing more than what we revealed in 13.
They did it.
So
Yeah, they did it.
Long plan.
They actually did do it. It was very cool. It was an awesome reveal, and so it was nice to see that, too. How do you handle the challenge of keeping the momentum of tracks going? Because you've got Skies at Death's Door, Deathlok's arrived, and then Olympics. You got a month off. What's the challenge for you as executive producer to just go,
every week is just it's hard enough to get people to show up week to week, but when you're off 2 or 3 weeks at a time, it's really hard. What's nice is our last few episodes have been far away and our ratings have held. I'm hoping with Captain America, which will have a big Marvel presence and will get people thinking about Marvel in a way that, you know, that'll give us a little boost that people go, this is cool. Give us, if they'd gone away, come back, give us a chance because they won't be disappointed. And for everybody else, you know, we've got 14, 15, and then I think we're going to run like the last, part of the reason we're doing this is so we can run this last, 6 or 7, I think, in a row is the plan.
Yeah, by the time this interview airs, we've had a couple of episodes, so we know what happened to Sky. So I'm going to just go ahead and assume during this interview she's okay.
Wow. Well, okay. That's yours to decide.
Oh, I hope she's okay by the time this airs. You wouldn't do that to us, would you?
Well, what do you mean by okay?
I mean, she was like, she's near death. As we're recording this, she's near death.
Evil? You mean...
I do have one more follow-up question, but we're almost there. I will get there in a second. What can fans of the show expect by the end of season one? What can you tell us when this is all wrapped up? What can we expect?
I think you can expect a satisfying closure to the big things we brought up, which is. And I will say this because if you watch the pilot, Coulson, he really doesn't know, does he? And Tahiti. And so I think by the end of the season, you'll have a sense of, this is what happened, this is why, and then that'll launch something else. We begin with Mike Peterson. We're turning him into Deathlok. I think we will follow that off to a satisfying conclusion. I think the clairvoyant, something we set up early, coming through, will be another season-long arc that will be paid off nicely. I think there will be several smaller things that we have been brought up and you might think we've forgotten about. I would say stick around. We probably haven't. We've brought up issues and questions about Sky being an 084. I think we'll move that ball farther down the field. I think, what else? I think the other thing that we're doing is we brought in Fitzsimmons, Sky as young, naive, innocent characters, and what we're trying to do is earn their skills and earn them being S.H.I.E.L.D. agents in a way that you don't question. And I think what Sky has been going through, and as she's been getting stronger and wiser and better at everything she does, not just as a computer, somebody with computer skills, but with all skills, I think what Chloe has been doing with that is terrific. I think Fitzsimmons in the field, watching them grow that way, I think Ward, and I think you're really going to see how his specialist skills come into play as we go forward. I would say if you think of the movie and what the setup is and what the payoff is, I think you'll find we haven't forgotten any of those, and I think we have pretty satisfying answers. I think, Tahiti so far has been satisfying and not what people expected. And, we're trying to find ways to make emotional sense. And the other thing is, I think by the end of the season, you're really going to care a whole lot about all of them, even more than you may already.
Speed round for Jeffrey Bell. Are you ready?
I'll try.
Can we expect more appearances by Samuel L. Jackson?
That's level 7, sorry.
I knew I wasn't up there yet. You got me at Fitzsimmons, don't you? All right, level 5. That's fine. In the writer's room, have you kicked around the idea of having Robert Downey Jr. or Tom Hiddleston on the show?
We've kicked around the idea of having everyone who ever lived possibly to be on the show.
Way to keep it broad. You brought this up earlier. Sky is an 084 in one of the episodes you've written, Object of Unknown Origin. Will we see a resolution of that mystery this season? Kind of hinted that that would be the case. I'm assuming that's so.
I'm saying we'll continue to move that ball down the field.
Will we find out her superpowers this season?
Who said anything about superpowers?
So close. On Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season, will there be any tie-ins to Captain America, Winter Soldier?
No, not all heroes are super. Not all heroes are super.
I think she is. On Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., will there be any tie-ins to Captain America, Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, or The Avengers, The Age of Ultron?
God, I hope Joss throws us a bone. I mean, that's 2 years from now. So, we need to still be.
Well, Captain America is right around the corner. So, can we expect a little bit of Captain America crossover?
I don't know.
Falcon flies through, just quick shot, little freeze frame. All right. Other than Coulson, will the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cast members show up on the big screen?
Again, not my call.
All right. Will we find out more about the first 6 procedures on Coulson and how he was brought back to life before the end of season 1?
I would say you will find out. I think by the end of season 1, you will have a satisfying understanding of what happened.
Of the first 6 procedures.
And by satisfying, I don't mean like, oh, that was okay. I mean, I think we've got good answers.
All right. Will we ever meet Coulson's former girlfriend?
Ever?
Ever.
Down the road, anything's possible. It sounds like the kind of story we would do someday.
Is she Catherine Bishop? Thought I could sneak that one in there. All right, by your laughs, I could tell that I'm still at level 5. All right, is the Clairvoyant based on a Marvel character, or is it somebody completely original to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
That's level 7.
Have you talked to Tim Blake Nelson about an upcoming episode, being cast for an upcoming episode?
Level 7.
Title for episode 13 is TRACKS. It is an acronym. What does TRACKS stand for?
Oh, we don't usually tell people that.
But for Comic Book Central audience, your fans.
You know what? I don't have my honestly, we have it. I have it on my computer. My computer is not in front of me. I'm not as good as Jed can remember every acronym ever.
But it's not level 7.
No, I'd be happy to tell you what the acronym was. I just don't remember.
Your S.H.I.E.L.D. people can email me, and we'll put that on in the post-interview comments then.
Okay.
At least we could reveal that one.
Yeah, we got to get something out of the speed round. We'll usually get two or three. You know, we'll come up with two or three, and then a funny one.
Okay.
We'll find something that we find satisfying, and so.
All right, we'll get that out to our ends. What is your confidence level in season two of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Simultaneously 100%, and oh my God, please.
That's a great answer.
That's true on every show I've ever. Yeah. Like every year I ran Angel, we barely came back. It was critical darling, and everyone loved it. And because we were on the WB, we were like number 100 every week. And so they'd always wait for the development and go, do we have anything better? No, we don't. Okay, let's stick with Angel because they loved it, not because we made them a lot of money. I think this is too good a show, frankly, to not bring back. Not my call, but I think we're telling really great stories. I think they just keep getting better. I think our numbers are actually really good when you factor in Live Plus 3, Live Plus 7. So let's say I'm hopeful that we're coming back, but I don't know anything. Nobody ever says anything ever because it's Marvel, and you know.
We talked about the security levels.
I think the government can learn a little bit. They could learn a little something about security from Marvel.
So we've heard.
Marvel should be doing security at the Sochi Olympics. That's all I'm going to say.
Perfect. In the Marvel movie and TV universe, how old is Nick Fury?
You'd have to ask the Marvel movie people that.
All right. Maybe you could check on that for me and get back.
I mean, I honestly, because I don't know. Nobody said he's 12, he's 15, he's 36, he's Sam Jackson, who's somewhere, I'm going to guess, somewhere between 40 and 106 years old, because you can't tell.
All right. And finally, before Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ends its run, whenever that may be, will we see a cameo by the original Nick Fury, David Hasselhoff?
He is the original?
Yes, sir. Did I just give you an idea for an episode?
That would be, you know, you mean if we do a Bizarro universe, if we do a Bizarro...
You get the Hoff.
You know, where they wake up and everybody's different, like on Seinfeld, where they had... Yes. And you go see Fury and he's this white guy with the patch?
He's David Hasselhoff.
With the Hoff, anything's possible, right?
Hey,
you never count the Hoff out.
Feel free to take that and put that in a little episode. We'll know it was from Comic Book Central. Jeffrey Bell, you and your team are giving us one very cool ride on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I can't wait to see what's in store. Thanks for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
Thanks a lot, Joe. I enjoyed talking to you.
And listeners, I wanted to let you know, I heard back from Jeffrey after we recorded that interview. He's got some more inside S.H.I.E.L.D. information. He writes, "Hi, Joe. At long last, I bring you some level 7 answers. The writers like to have fun with their acronyms, and they had come up with a bunch for tracks. The two they liked best were Team Reacting as Clairvoyant Kills Sky, and second, Team Races After Cybertech Knee Socket. I hope your listeners enjoy those. Thanks again." Well, thank you, Jeffrey, for granting us that level 7 access. I really appreciate it. I'm glad the first acronym didn't come true and they didn't kill Sky. It's another peek behind the S.H.I.E.L.D. curtain. And again, thank you for making sure Sky was, as I said, okay. Well, okay, she's alive and she's going after Nick Fury with Coulson, and May has tipped off S.H.I.E.L.D. Okay, maybe she won't be as okay as I thought she was. Oh, so many mysteries to solve. And maybe we're reading a little too much into the acronyms. Fair enough. But can the writers and producers really blame us? They're dropping in all these little clues to bigger mysteries in every episode. So, of course, we're going to wonder what the acronyms stand for. Now, on the episode Tahiti, I wonder what that acronym stands for. Well, if the writers are playing that game, we can too. Right into the lair, Comic Book Central Nation. Let me know what you think the acronym Tahiti stands for. T-A-H-I-T-I. We saw it on the door as Coulson was investigating how he was brought back to life. What does the acronym stand for? Who is the mysterious blue creature Coulson discovered? Does it tie into Sky's origin? And what about Scarecrow's brain? Send your thoughts to Joe at comicbookcentral.net. I can't wait to hear what you think, and I'll read your emails on the show. Speaking of emails, we got one in this week from Debbie over at the iSpy forum site. Debbie writes in regarding a couple of great Robert Culp sites. the I Spy Forum, and the Consummate Culp. Debbie writes, "Hey Joe, the Consummate Culp, just let us know about your great podcast with Joseph Culp. We Culpophiles are one connected family. Your interview was so very, very well done. Thanks for your intelligence and style and wit. I was delighted to hear your background on the Culp family reunion on Vanity Says the Preacher. It sounded mighty familiar, and then I saw your recommendation on the Consummate Culp's Facebook page about our posting. So I knew you had read it. It was great fun putting that all together. And I just posted a link about your most entertaining interview, sort of an illustrated version. Thanks again." Well, thank you, Debbie, and thank everyone at the iSpy Forum and Consummate Culp. Yeah, those are great sites, and thanks for putting that link up to the podcast episode with Joseph Culp. A lot of great images, and it really kind of goes through and talks about what we were talking about on the podcast. It really illustrates that. So really nice job on that. Yep, when I was doing research for Joseph Culp, I saw your thread on his episode of The Greatest American Hero, Vanity Says the Preacher, which was written and directed by his father, Robert, who, of course, played Agent Bill Maxwell. There was a ton of great information on there. I posted that link on the Comic Book Central Facebook page, and you can also find links to the Consummate Culp Facebook page and website there as well. Again, thank you for the great information. You guys really did a lot of research. Very helpful when you're going back and trying to find out information on some of these older episodes. So thanks for that. And don't forget our Comic Book Central Facebook page, facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. The website, comicbookcentral.net. You can get all of the back episodes. You can get caught up on those if you missed any of them. Or subscribe on iTunes. You'll never miss an episode. Much appreciated if you can rate and review the show on iTunes as well. It only takes a minute. Comic Book Central is also over on Twitter at comicbookctrl. And again, you can send those emails to joe@comicbookcentral.net. Let me know what you think of those SHIELD acronyms and mysteries. Next week on Comic Book Central, she's smart, she's stunning, and she looked sensational saving the Earth in spandex alongside Buck Rogers in the 25th century. Erin Gray will be here next week to talk about life as a 70s sci-fi icon and working with legendary comic book heroes today. Have a great week, folks. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Unported License. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
That's level 7.